Welcome to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs to view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is March 26th, 2018. We're almost finished with the first quarter of the year, 2018. It goes fast. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon. Gray as usual, rainy as usual. So thank you for joining us. We have with us a friend of our show, who was here a few weeks ago, and we ended the show abruptly, and I wanted to get her back, Heidi Lambert, who was out with me at Cape Perpetua. The last time she was with us, we were pressed at the last few minutes. She started telling a story of how she had her children create nuclear waste with candy. So I wanted to get her back on to talk about that and really discuss what this nuclear waste at Hanford's about and really what we're looking at. So thank you, Heidi Lambert, for joining us again. I sincerely really appreciate you making the time to join us.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking me back, because this is one of my favorite stories to share. And we just ran out of time last time, and so I was mid-story. But, we were talking about, you were asking me of how I talk. I have two teenage girls, and I'm really open with them about Hanford and the history of Hanford. And so you were kind of asking me, you know, how we talked about it. And I think we were talking about, like, how you can choose to make it really scary, or it doesn't really, it can be science, and it doesn't have to be, you know, fear-mongering. And so one of the things is we all used to live in the Tri-Cities together, and so they grew up with me talking about the tank farm and the area out in the area. And so what had happened was we got a 1 gallon juice jug, a glass, like, apple cider juice jug. And I took the kids to the store and I told them that they could pick out any, like, three candies each. And so they bought, like, Nerds and jelly beans and Pop-Its and just different kinds of sugar candies. And I bought a container of Jell-O and I bought a thing of whipped cream. And we went home and I explained to them that when they did experiments in the 1940s, they didn't really know about plutonium and they didn't really know what it would make. And every time they made it, when they were done, they would throw it, well, first they threw it in a trench in the ground, honestly, an open trench, and then they realized quickly that that was a really bad idea. And so then they started with these 30-foot by 90-foot tanks, these gigantic, you know, metal steel tanks, and put them in the ground. And then when there was an experiment, and they would throw it in the tank. So we would make Jell-O, and we would mix the Jell-O up with a little bit of candy, and we put some of it in little ice cube trays and put it in the freezer, and we put some of it in the fridge, and sometimes we would just take it and pour it in the jar. And so I was just trying to show to them an example of how they were mixing different components, and they would get different kinds of reactions, so they would figure out kind of what they were dealing with. But then when they were done, it all got put back into these tanks. And the truth is this was in the 50s and 60s. It was very top secret lab work. And so different experiments got dumped into different tanks. So I didn't really get into that because we only had 1 gallon jar. So, but the whole idea was that each gallon of waste, of the 56 million gallons of waste at Hanford, each gallon is uniquely different. And no 2 gallons are exactly the same. They even go as far as to say no 2 tablespoons are exactly the same. So,
excuse me, do you mean that the people at the Hanford site say that there's no
Yeah, it's fully disclosed that they have no clue what's in what tanks, and each tank has different components, and they call it a slurry. And so, you know, a robust slurry of different mixtures and components. So that's what we did. We put all of these candies in this jar, and once the jar was almost full, I stuck whipped cream in there and explained to them that that was the gas, you know, and we put the lid on there, and quickly the lid popped because there was definitely a reaction within the jar. And so they just kind of got to understand that you couldn't really contain it. And then what we did was we got, so what's happening is with these gallons of waste of all these different components, they're trying to figure out how the tanks now leak.
According to the Hanford site, it said that 67 of the tanks leak some of their contents. Out of the 149, 67, they admit, have leaked their contents into the ground.
Right, and there's 64 single-shell units.
It says 66. There's 66, 66. I beg your pardon. So good, close, though.
Every single-shell tank is leaking. And now some even of the double-shell tanks
are. Oh, actually, I beg your pardon. This is what it says right on here. Of the 149 of these single-shell tanks were built at Hanford between 1943 and 1964. 83 single-shell tanks are located at the 200 West area, and another 66 single-shell tanks are at the 200 area. However, even with 149 tanks available, the volume of chemicals generated through the plutonium production far exceeded the capacity of the tanks. It goes on. So
And remember, that's all next to the river. That's all those were within miles of the river, the Columbia River.
The thing is, this leaking between 43 and 64, when all this started stuff, when all this happened, this plutonium is still harming us to this day. It still is causing genetic, the half-life, meaning it's not even halfway finished, its half-life is 27,500 years. So plutonium gets to hang around with all of us and, you know, randomly choose the victims. That's the answer.
Yeah, and the thing is so that they want to go in and they want to pipe out that waste from these tanks and pipe it to a vitrification plant, which was a French concept, and because France is like the second most nuke-using country, or it was at some point, so they have a lot of waste. And so, but because all of their waste was made in the same era, the same decade, and they have pretty much the same, you know, consistency, it was easy for them to pipe it out of the tanks and create a solid mass into glass, and then it would be more containable. So we spent billions and billions of dollars to mimic this vitrification plant, only to realize that none of our waste is the same consistency. Some of these tanks have huge things in them, like buses and lab material, like lots of strong physical attributes. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, back to my 1 gallon of nuclear waste with the kids.
Yeah, but I'm kind of confused. You said they had one because the news, I've heard in the news that they're proposing to start a new vitrification plant.
They started a vitrification plant in the 90s. And when they started it, there was huge whistleblowing against it. And the whistleblowing was the engineers saying that this, we didn't know what's in these tanks. And so we can't expect to just pipe it out of the tank into the, and there was a lot of, when they do try to pipe, because that is the only, like, alternative we have, is to pipe it out of the tanks to other tanks. And even then, there's huge spills. They spill it. It's so corrosive that there is always leakage. And so, again, it's letting it out into our atmosphere and letting it in our environment.
You know, the thing that really caught my ear, and it's still stuck in my brain since you said it a few weeks ago, was that they took the tools, once they realized how poisonous the nuclear pollution was, the nuclear contamination was, they actually took the tools that they used to create all this stuff and dumped it in the Hanford dump sites, along with all the other byproducts.
Well,
Like they have to get rid of their stuff on a regular basis, so they're continually adding back into the pile?
Yeah, and I also think like medical waste is the probably the biggest contribution of it now is medical waste, because anyone who gets chemo, I mean, that's a form of radiation.
Yeah.
And so anytime you're in a hospital and they're doing chemo in that hospital, there is a radiated byproduct that has to go.
This is why I love having you on. First it was the food, now it's the hospitals.
Sure, hospitals are very radioactive. I mean, when you think of x-rays, and you know, there's the nuclear industry did a lot for medicine in a weird way. I mean, a lot of our hospitals use a lot of different kinds of technology that was discovered through the nuclear science.
It's true, you know, but I hadn't actually thought about that, the waste that's generated from the hospitals. Like, that also, that's a big business. Like, people talk about chemo as if it's nothing. Like, yeah, well, the doctor says I have to have it. Okay, let's give you a shot of penicillin. Oh, except it's radioactive penicillin. So, here, let's give it to you. It's going to cure you. Don't worry.
Yeah, and don't let your cat sit on your lap for the next 2 weeks because you radiate your animals, you know. Exactly. Don't let your... If you have babies, you can't hold your baby when you're going through chemo because you're so radioactive. I mean, if you want to think about something else that's really crazy, I once was in a conversation with Helen Caldicott when she talked about funeral homes and how radioactive our cemeteries are because of how many people are dosed with chemo to fight cancer but lose their battle and pass, and then all that radiation goes into our dirt, into the ground.
Oh, my God, I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, because it goes on for thousands and thousands. Whether or not we are alive to carry it, it will continue to live, you know, to react. It's a reaction that goes on for 27,000 years.
That's like these tank sites. I mean, for real, the only thing they can do, see, they really actually have to come up with a science that reverts it back, that can stop the process. I really genuinely believe if they can break it up, they can stop it from being broken up. They can put something in there or immute it. And I think the secret comes in through phytoremediation, through studying the plants, through studying mushrooms, because mushrooms also do the same thing. They basically are like a big, gigantic computer. Look at the dirt and say, okay, what do you need to be normal? Let's create it. And that's kind of what, you know, in layman's terms, that's what mushrooms do. That's why mushrooms are really good at remediating the land. Same thing with the cannabis and the keef. What's it called?
Yeah, Kineef. I know that they work a lot with fungus and bacteria in the soil at Hanford. I've even heard them putting vegetable oil in the ground to try to create, like, oil barriers to keep the water from touching. I mean, something about nuclear waste is missing, its atom has been split, so it's missing, so it's constantly searching to create itself back to whole.
Right.
And so it's always going to go towards water, and it wants to be in water. I mean, the idea of putting an atom back together, to me, seems very romantic, you know. But again, they took it apart, so they might be able to figure out how to put it back together. But again, it's that whole realization that these are contained atoms that are, you know, moving throughout our universe and have since the 1940s. I mean, there's been a lot of news lately about just them demolishing the plutonium site, the U plant and the T plant, and how much plutonium was put into the air, and people breathed it, and then they went and they looked in people's homes. I think there was like three homes that they found waste in, and this is all within this year. So you're like, okay, if they're this smart and know this much and are still screwing up this bad, imagine what they did two, 3 decades ago. Clearly people were wearing it in their clothes, out in the farm, working, bringing it inside, you know. It's naive to think that this was contained.
That's very true. I mean, the thing is, I think we're human beings living in this environment right now. And this conversation is extremely limited because people do not, it's not even a consideration of discussion. Jerome Hebert and I talk about this a lot. Like, how do we get people to start acknowledging that the nuclear, the loosed nuclear contamination, the contamination that we are living with from the plutonium that was bombed on us, that continues to be bombarded from Fukushima, from Chernobyl's not over, Three Mile Island's not really over. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't really fixed anything. Like, every single nuclear disaster doesn't ever really get fixed. Their remediation is, let's bury it in the ground. That's the remediation. And deny the medical aid to the victims.
Right. That's the invisible. It's invisible, Lonnie. You can't see it. You can't smell it. The areas where there were the disasters still have plants and birds and bugs, you know. We're so taught that it's going to be this, like, desolate, you know, nothing land. Which is, which can happen, you know, like in the
well, like the coast. We went to the coast. Really, honestly, Heidi, we went back this last weekend. We went up to where Hecate Beach has those little tide pools, you know, where the lighthouse is, that little cove.
Yeah.
So we went. Is it Hecate? That's how I called it, but everybody told me they call it Hecate here.
Yeah, that's funny. I don't know.
It is Hecate. That's how you do say it. You do say it Hecate. Anyways, the tide pools. We went out at 7 a.m. in the morning to the tide pools. We got up really early and drove out there. And there was no life. Very few sea anemones. One of my subscribers put on one of my channels on that, the list of all the animals that we should have seen. And we should have seen mussels. We should have seen these little things that pop open. I forget what they're
called.
Yeah. We didn't see hard. And few birds, fewer birds. I mean, it was a shock. To be honest, you should look at, I have a video or two, the same environmentalist, Jerome Hebert on YouTube. He has a bunch of videos. It is kind of stunning how, like, there is life there. Like, you do see some a little bit tiny, but it's not thriving like it. Now, we are going to go back in the summer and see, maybe it's just the winter because it's, like, super cold. Maybe that's what has to do with it.
Well, and it has been really stormy, but I'm afraid that, you know, the statistics is low. Like, you know, even the fisheries, everything's low. The crab numbers are low, the salmon's low, the tuna's low, everything and all of that affects everything. You know, there's definitely a food chain. Like, we had a huge sea lion die off, the starfish wasting disease. You know, there's several situations in the last 3 years where they call it a calcification of the ocean, a warming and a calcification of the ocean, where there's some sort of minerals. I honestly think that it has to do with all of the underwater bombings and all the contaminants. I mean, we have no respect for the earth. Our culture has zero respect. I mean, We do not care about what we produce, the amount of plastics we produce. I mean, it's been the perfect era for the nuke industry to thrive, you know. And maybe
reason they're thriving is it's that whole idea that we're humans. It's that Atlas Shrugged idea that God made us superior over all beings on the planet. He gave us everything. He gave us these gifts. It's our right. I had this argument with an ex-boss of mine. They genuinely believe that they have a right that if they destroyed every animal living in every river and everywhere, and we just grew the animals for our own benefit to eat and to pet and to look at, that is perfectly in accordance with nature, and that's how it should be.
And I guess that there's some weird, like, ignorant faith that it will renew itself, you know, and that people think that it will just come back and that they don't realize that things aren't coming back. And then when you lose, you know, if we lose an algae or they have, like, what they call an algae bloom going on, where there's this huge, like, green blob in the Pacific because it's so warm. And then that's affecting how the light gets through the ocean's layers, you know. And so it all affects itself. And you're right. For some reason, you know, through Christianity or whatever religions, we've decided to not be in our environment, but instead think that the environment serves us. And it's a sad thing, you know. Lonnie said, I don't know what to do about it other than try to teach my kids that we are part of this world and our actions do make a difference, and try to make positive actions by, like, using less power and not needing so much stuff and reusing anything that's possible and buying things that's used.
Well, isn't that, like, you know, the activist, you know, mantra, like, we do our best, but then the people in power, like, they don't care. This is the issue. It really gets down. I mean, I think that we're in an era where these people in power, they are obviously doing what they're going to do, period. It's on, game on, they're going. John Bolton is now the national security advisor. Prepare for war. Life is going to get hard for many people in this country as planned. And that is really, you know.
It is frightening, the whole, like, Korea
but
nuke.
I think our push. Thing that we can do is, I mean, I think we need to put out the idea that we need solutions. Like, we need solutions to the nuclear contamination and admit that we have nuclear. The more I look into this, honestly, the nuclear contamination is at the root of a lot of things. Like, even the secrecy, the secret government. The Manhattan Project, we're still living with the Manhattan Project. The Unpatriot Act was the denouement of it. Like, it was it. That really took away a lot of our rights, to be honest. The Unpatriot Act really put the nail in the coffin for American democracy. And we're wondering, it took them, what, 15 years to fully enact it, where we now have a president and a Congress that are completely out of control. We have no idea what they passed in this omnibus bill that could negatively affect every single one of us. We don't know what they snuck into this thing. We have no idea. None. No. Zero. I mean, and we have nuclear contamination killing, I would say, hundreds of thousands of people in the United States every year. If you look at every nuclear site, just look at the CDC. I did a simple thing on my YouTube channel. I was dumbfounded. I printed out two maps, one from the CDC that showed the areas where all the children's disabilities were, and then I took a map of the nuclear power plants in the United States, and I put the two pieces together and held it up to my screen. Like, you could actually literally see it. You could see the overlay. It looked like a blot. You know how, like, ink wells blot out? Well, from every nuclear power plant, it was like an ink blot. Bink, yeah. Bink, bink. And so the denial that we are forced to live in is unnecessary, I would say.
Well, I do think that people get accustomed to it. Like, with me growing up in the Tri-Cities, it was just the norm that everyone will get cancer. And some people will survive it, and some people won't, and you get different degrees of it. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about preventative care. And,
you know what's really hilarious, though? But then you have this conversation, well, that's why everyone needs health insurance.
Yeah, it's so
that
really
actually
true.
Totally makes me, like, instead of the conversation, this is why we need nationalized health care. it becomes you have to pay. The victim pays the perpetrator. It's just beyond comprehension in the United States.
Oh,
it's like
I totally
mafia
agree.
Shakedown. It's like the mafia has like taken over the government. And actually,
totally,
you know, when
agree.
They created the IRS, this is how the penalties were very severe, just like the mafia. Well, you know, their penalties were really severe. They kind of used them. They created the IRS to trap the mafia so that they could get them because they were too smart to catch them and all the other kinds of crimes they would commit. So really, and they used mafia tactics. But I think in the whole general idea of our government, especially since they started the secret government in World War II, when it really just became obvious, the secret government openly connected and colluded, I guess would be the word, but openly connected with the military, the secret military, and it just took off. They created a secret military, and that is
the nuclear complex. You know, there's an industrial nuclear complex, and there's a great professor at a University of Oregon, Nick Luigi, I think is how you pronounce his name, and he did an amazing study of Fukushima, where he went into Fukushima into Japan and started taking boards of directors and looking at the board of directors for TEPCO and then what other boards did those directors sit on. And then how, and he connected so much just by people who worked on boards of directors. And they would be on a bank's board, and then they were on, you know, TEPCO's, or they were on the university. They worked at the university side, but everyone had their hands in two different pockets. And the same goes for the United States, too. You look into United States charities and nonprofits, and you start looking at their boards of directors, and they're completely tied to the energy complex and to the universities and to the politics. So, I mean, it's so connected. And so if you get some people who are making money and they want to justify their money, then they're not going to put the money for the college to go ahead and start to study against what they're trying to make money at. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, they're going to be pro-nuke. A lot of universities are pro-nuke because they're funded by the energy companies. And same with the government. The politicians are going to be pro-nuke. Obama, you know, as much as I miss him, Illinois had the most private nuclear reactors than any other state. You know, so he was completely pro-nuke. Completely.
That's right. He was supported very, very much. His financial backing came directly from the pro-nuke industry, from the nuclear industry. He was very, very pro. I mean, one of his last acts was to hand, Jose Ruiz from the Oregon State University a check for $12 million a year after he graduated to start the SMR program.
Right. Yeah. Oregon is huge on the SMRs.
And they are starting. I read an article, and maybe you can verify if you've heard this, but I read an article that said that the military is planning on using them on their bases.
So I have believed that the military has been using different forms of SMRs for decades.
Me too. I think
definitely
a lot
fueling,
of
like the airline carrier, the air carriers, whatever they're called. What are they called, Lonnie? The aircraft carriers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fueled by nuclear, and so are submarines. So are satellites. A lot of military is fueled by nuclear power. And so the SMRs...
Is that openly known? Is that an open fact?
I don't really fully remember how I totally know that, but I know I've known it for decades, and I have confirmed it several times. And the last was the aircraft carrier, because they were talking about how slow they went, but they don't need to refuel. And it's because that's the beautiful thing about nuclear waste, right? I mean, it just keeps going. So that's where it's a beautiful thing for a satellite. You don't need to bring the satellite down to refuel it, because the waste is going to react up there for thousands of years.
It's called the Nimnitz-class aircraft carrier, a class of 10 nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. They've been operating for over 20 years without refueling and are predicted to have a service life of over 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we wonder why our oceans are dying. Yeah, exactly. And there's submarines. Uh-huh. Yeah, the idea of the SMR...
So what they with their... Don't they need... They're just dumping their nuclear water into the ocean?
Well, honestly, I've never looked at the design of those boats. I'd like to believe that they contain the water and not stick it back in the ocean, but then
I'll
again,
bet you they filter it and dump it back in, what they're
it
recommending.
Would be easier, then they don't have to carry wastewater. I mean, that's what a majority of the wastewater is the ones that cool the rod. For decades, that's what they did at Hanford. Lots of reactors, they would just bring the water in, cool it down, and put the water back out into the normal source. I mean, there's so many different levels of contamination, Lonnie. There's so much. Like, there's that whole conscious contamination. And then there's the stuff that we couldn't contain that contaminates, you know. But until people start to realize just how loose this is and how not able to contain it, it's not containable, that we'll start to realize what we're really up against. But sadly, it probably will take us a few more accidents and, you know, probably a nuclear war before people will figure it out.
Probably. Well, we're planning on that just as we speak. I mean, honestly, I think people need to prepare. Now is the time to prepare with John. I told that to my kids. They thought I was being radical the other day. I think we need to...
Nuclear threat?
Yes. I think John Bolton is ready for war. And he is the president's, and the closer Mueller gets to outing his really illegal transactions with his Russian counterparts, like him and Kushner thought they could run the government as their own little private corporation and made all these deals, secret deals. And they, I think it's the weirdest part. I think they really totally thought, because they had Mike Flynn on the inside and he knew all about the spying, that they didn't have to protect themselves. They were so arrogant, they thought they would never go after Mike Flynn and his whole little gang.
Well, they definitely think they're above the law. They definitely, even at this point, think they're above the law.
Yeah. Well, just like the nuclear industry, this is what we're talking about. Same with the pharmaceutical industries. All these people that have made billions profiting off of people's health and destroying our environment are all, it's, don't you think that's a big part of the conversation that's not being had? Like, why are the largest, the most criminal perpetrators, why are they let off the hook 100%?
Well, it is interesting when you think about the medical field, because I think about the manufacturers of OxyContin, like on the East Coast.
Yes.
That they have millions and millions of dollars of pills in like little tiny towns of 2,000, you know, millions of pills went there. And I mean, there, it was definitely, they were knowledgeable and didn't, they chose greed, you know. They chose greed. And I think it's the same with the nuclear industry.
Yes.
However,
but we live in a culture, this is the same thing with the nuclear industry. Okay, we're identifying it, but nothing happens. Like, we're like, we just let these batterers get away with it. That's the thing. And now we've got a president who's a batterer.
Right.
And he's about to pummel all of us for hating him.
Right. But he's also ignorant, and he doesn't know the extent. Like, I am sure that Trump is so ignorant. He knows nothing of nuclear energy. He knows nothing. And that's why he can go and spout off that he's going to drop these bombs, you know, and make people pay. It's like watching a four-year-old have a tantrum, you know, and wave scissors around without realizing that he's going to cut out someone's eye, you know. That Trump is just, I'm astounded that that's our leader, and our current leader, you know.
Many people think he's a smart person. Many people think he's a smart person.
Well, it doesn't say much for their intelligence, is what I'm sad to say, you know.
I mean, we have a president who doesn't read his morning briefings, who doesn't think he needs an infrastructure to help run a country of how many millions of people? You know? Like, it's really... We actually have a government, unless he wants to, you know, he's going to declare all-out anarchy. I mean, to me, it all kind of gets back to the Manhattan Project. Seriously, this whole thing about the nuclear waste, Wendy, you lived it. You lived in Hanford. It was like, and yet in your, in where, you know, in Richland to this day, people think that what they're doing good for the country because they're helping clean up the nuclear contaminated. They're spending their lives helping clean up that contaminated site.
Well,
that's actually
true,
though.
In the 40s and 50s, they were saving the world from Hitler. You know, it definitely fed into the Cold War of that people did believe that they were saving us from communist tyrants. And now, you know, they think that they're saving us from the waste. I mean, most people you talk to who live there will tell you that they're donating their lives or whatever, you know, to clean it up. And that's why they're there, is for the cleanup.
Has there
but
been
whether or not, to me, I feel like the cleanup is not effective because we keep making the waste faster than, you know, we don't know how to clean it up. So to me, we should stop making the waste until we figure out how to clean it up.
That's my question to you. Do you, I mean, you've been obviously engaged with this way longer than I have, but has there any been conversation about we need to find an answer, like a way to stop it from doing what it's doing, to reverse the process? Because it seems to me their money is spent on burying it, moving it around, shuffling it around, and not really figuring out, like hiring scientists to do scientific studies to figure out, you know, how to reverse the process, like studying phytoremediation and, you know, and how that really works.
Well, first off, if you start putting your funding towards fixing it, then you're admitting that it's a mess.
Yes, and that is they must do that. That's in fact exactly the human crime that they're doing, the crime against humanity, is their complete denial that they are causing harm.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Because, and they're going to keep denying that. It's probably, and again, it's like the generation that brought us nukes, there is some of those people still alive, you know, especially when it comes to politics. And so, because it's only 40 years old, the science is really quite, I mean, maybe going on to 60 from the 40s. So, yeah, I guess we're going about 80 years, an 80-year-old science. So I think it's going to be the next generation that's really going to look at it and be like, why were you guys allowed to do this? Kind of like what we're looking at with them doing like the open trenches. Like, why did they think it was okay to just make these huge open trenches and just pour waste into it? And it just goes to show on how little they could not understand the longevity of the substance. They couldn't understand that they, and I still feel like many people still, when you have conversations about nuclear science, they still can't conceive that this is going to be around for so long and that it changes its physical form. It's an atom. It moves. It does not stay, you know, solid. It's not a solid state. It moves in the wind. It moves in the water. It evaporates. You know, it becomes a tree, and then you burn your tree, and then it goes up in smoke, and it's still a reacting atom. And so, you know, until people start to understand that science, they can't even perceive what we're talking about. You know, and
that's
I'll never
true.
Forget.
That's true. But this, I think that they can't conceive it because then it means that there's an urgency to it. I think that's why people turn their brain off to it. Because it creates an urgency. If you realize, if you think about that, we have this plutonium. You actually really highlighted that to me in our interviews here, in our conversations here on this radio show, when you mentioned that it's not just Fukushima, it's not just Hanford. They've been doing this. Think of all the plutonium they bombed us with during World War II. That plutonium is still around. It's just as harmful. And it, not only that, it's changing its... it's letting off. There's a bunch of other things that came with it that have passed their half-lives and gone in to create other things. Like, they all sort of build up on themselves. Very few of them actually just die. They all create daughters, you know, other atoms.
There's 13 stages of atomic waste. that it travels through before it turns to lead. But you're right. It's not just us. It's not just American. There are lots of countries, over 20 countries have nuclear power.
And yeah, so what are they doing their waste? Exactly. And out of all these companies that, and frankly, it seems to me there's only a few companies really doing it. When we talk about it, there's maybe 6 or 7 that can come to mind quickly. You know what I mean? All around the world, there's not a lot.
That manufacture them and sell
that
them.
Really do it. Like they're all sort of subsidiaries of something, of some bigger one or two or three, you know, just a handful of them. Those companies are. But not just cleanup. See, I think the language needs to change from cleanup to solution. Like, because the cleanup at Hanford is its own deal, because Hanford is sort of its own biological mega problem, I think.
But it's true, Lonnie, that the same methods that they use to clean up Hanford is what they use at Fukushima, they use it
at
Chernobyl. And they use it at 3 Mile. They use it in India. I mean, it's the whole France. The whole cleanup is you put the dirt in a plastic bag and you set it aside and you'll see it in 30,000 years.
That's
there
exactly
is no cleanup.
Right. That's exactly
there isn't.
Right.
And so, again, it's just this big facade. This is supposed to reassure everybody that it's all contained and everything's taken care of. Everything's safe and just go about your life and drink your wine and eat your potato chips and don't worry about it. But the reality is that the soil isn't just in garbage bags. It's not contained. And it is a worldwide issue. And last night, I was drinking wine with my friend, and we were talking. And I was saying, you know, I had grown up drinking wine. My 20s, we drank so much wine because it was all over Eastern Washington. And it was what everyone drank was wine. And then I started to realize about the waste and realizing about the food. And so I didn't want to drink Washington wine. So then I look at Californian wine, and it's completely it's surrounded by reactors. Mm-hmm. Then I look at French wine. It's completely surrounded by waste. You know, Australia, they also have waste. South Africa, waste. You know, everywhere that wine grows, they have nuclear
South
waste.
America, you can get South American wine. Chile.
Yeah. That's
but I venture to say, if we were to look, because I think that Chile have a nuclear facility?
Yeah. Chile does, but I don't think Brazil.
Brazil does, I know for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, this is every continent. Every continent has it. And every, you know, so that's where for me, I don't feel an urgency when we talk about it. I feel like, oh, there's nothing I can do about it. And the only thing I feel like I can do about it is just keep talking to people about it because, you know, for so long I felt like no one would believe me or they thought that I was crazy. And a lot of times that is people's impression of me is like I'm a conspiratist. But then when they get to really get into the facts and look into the research, like they'll start to I'm not trying to hide or make anything up. This is just what I know, just like the aircraft carriers. Somewhere down the road, I've learned that they are nuclear powered, you know? And so I just try to share what I know about it. And hopefully by people bringing it out into conversation, it will take away some of this like top secrecy, you know, and people will know more about it. You know, like I have friends who live in India and we talk a lot about protesting nukes because in India, you know, they need the water more, you know, I wouldn't say more than us, but they definitely need their water and they don't want it contaminated. And nobody told them that their water is contaminated. But if you have a reactor, you're most likely contaminated to some degree.
Well, you kind of have to be because you live in at least once a year. They, you know, at least once a year, they have to clean the plant and that means they have to open it up, right?
Yeah, and change filters and change all kinds of things. And then again, anywhere where you have medical nuclear waste, that's the most waste on our roadways and trains currently is medical waste. And so, you know, we have semis that go to hospitals and get medical waste and are hauling it to Hanford or wherever the waste site is that they have the agreement to store it. And there's, you know, you get in an accident, it's going to be our first responders who go to that accident, and they're not prepared for nuclear waste.
That is for sure. I actually hadn't thought of that. They're not prepared for nuclear waste at all.
No, if you're like a police officer and you hear there's an accident and you go to it, you're going to it to help that driver. And also, what about all these drivers? These drivers that have to haul this nuclear waste, you know, are they more inclined to have cancer? Because I know that the train operators and the truck drivers who hauled waste from around and to Hanford had huge high rates of cancer because they were exposed to it all day long. You know, so there's lots of levels of exposure and not being contained and a lot of what ifs, you know, like a car wreck, a train wreck, and then how do you clean that up with people, you know, you because it's invisible, you just clean it up like it's a bunch of gloves and gowns. You don't even probably realize what you're dealing with.
It's so, this is the thing. We obviously, like you, this is why I really appreciate having you on the air, because you're not shocked by it anymore. You know what I mean? You've lived with it, and you have, like, a really, like, solid sort of a zen about it, like acceptance that this is really it, and what we really need to call for are answers. We need solutions, not just the cleanup. The cleanup does not mean just bury it in the ground. You know what I mean? We have to develop science to turn it around. I mean, it was created with science, and it'll be healed with science. That's what I think. Like, it's,
but it might take thousands of years to figure it out.
Might not take thousands. It might take like 20 years if they actually put their brain to it, if they put money into it. Right now, they're just gloating over the fact that they don't have to do jack. I mean, they are completely 100% unaccountable. Nobody goes to jail. Nobody pays the price for mutating children. No, nobody pays the price. Doctors cannot prescribe the correct medicines. Doctors are, you know, professionally hounded into complying and being complicit with the nuclear liars. Look, how do you think that the physicians of the men and women in Hanford, the whistleblowers, who when they get cancer and they are shocked that they can't get care for their treatment, and then they talk to the media, you think their physicians really want to be like that? No.
Well, I think they think they're getting care. That's the thing, is that so many of the physicians and doctors are pro-nuke around Hanford. They use, I mean, one of the best, like, x-ray schools in the nation is in Tri-Cities. So if you want to learn about how to do x-rays, you want to go to the Tri-Cities because they have the best machines. And so if you have this culture of doctors who totally believe in chemo and totally believe in using radiation as a medicine, you know, mammograms are radiation, you know. There's a weird conflict. You turn healers, they get confused, and there's a weird internal conflict on, are they doing harm or less harm, you know, by practicing.
Well, me personally, fundamentally, I believe that the AMA does a lot of harm to our physicians and to the American people by not allowing our doctors to learn chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathy, all the practices of medicine that truly heal people, because the AMA is not into healing, they and not into curing. They are into money for profit, period.
Yeah, it's true.
And because of that, they indoctrinate their doctors to basically believe the same thing. I mean, I think that's why doctors are seriously overworked 12, 15, 16-hour days, because you're just like, okay, whatever, this is what I need to do. You get into this rhythm. You know, the way they train them in the first place, these ER doctors, where these young interns go in there and make life and death decisions working 16 hours a day, that's intentional. Because when a doctor makes a wrong decision, it sits with them for life, which is another hook. That's a way an abuser hooks you in, is they make you do something, and then they can use it over you for the rest of your life.
Well, I definitely believe that people have good intentions, and I think that they mean well, and I've certainly seen miracles happen, but I do think that they don't want us to look at it holistically. I mean, another point is, like, Hanford should just offer free cancer screening. If you live within so many miles of a waste field or a reactor, they should give you...
Every nuclear power plant should have that. Every...
Yeah.
place where there's a nuclear facility.
If they really cared about people, they would be doing preventative care, and they don't do preventative care. But again, it's they don't want to look at it homeopath. They don't want to see the whole. They're not holistic. They don't want to look at the whole picture. They don't want to know, like, why is it if you eat certain foods you get cancer? You know, well, is it where did that food grow? Did it grow next to the reactor? You know, those are questions that are considered conspiracy ideas when, in fact, like you're saying, you can take sick kid clusters and point, you know, pull them up next to and on the map, and they're going to show you exactly where the reactors are. But that
well,
denial.
Well, that's not total scientific, but it's a good way to start a scientific study.
Well, as I'm saying, it doesn't take brain. You don't have to be
right.
a rocket
not,
scientist to
exactly.
figure this out. You know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to see that people are poisoning each other and themselves. And that's where I loved that tooth project. When I was in the Tri-Cities having my kids, they had a tooth project where they asked everyone, when your child loses their teeth, to send it into this lab. Well, then the lab went and checked the teeth, and the teeth were full of strontium, which is nuclear waste. It was what your body absorbs as a calcium.
Wow.
So there's several molecules, you know, or minerals that your body is looking for, and calcium, magnesium, potassium, and nuclear waste is just one little bit off of that, and it turns into strontium or cesium, and your body absorbs that. You know, and so that's what these poor kids, they had them from all over the U.S. with strontium in their teeth. And then that was what convinced me, like, oh, okay, what I eat goes through my body, and then it still goes to my child. And that's something that I have a lot of conversations with people about how you are what you eat. A lot of people don't believe that. A lot of people think still that they can eat fast food, Doritos, and soda pop and be healthy people. You know, so it's like until we all come on board with this kind of common science that, you know, we're all made of cells and atoms and, you know, organic, like, materials, not organic in the sense of organic, but I meant just like earth side things. That's what we are. And same with the animals, same with the
I think it's also people sort of give up and they equate it to happiness in life. You know, they've been sold that through the commercials. This is what will make you happy. So the idea of giving that up is like a penalty.
Sure. Because I know that in Tri-Cities, everybody has big fat houses and there's lots of restaurants and stores and people get fancy cars. And it's a very materialistic place. The happiest people there are the most materialistic, and then when they have all their materials around them, they sit there and say, you know, oh, I'm not worried about it, you know.
They have the boat show every year there. Every year, the boat show.
Oh, yeah, the boat races. And the river. Everyone sits in the river the whole time.
Right.
It is. It's very hot there in the summer, so there's a lot of water. Like, everybody has pools. And I'll never forget watching Erin Brockovich in that scene where she's trying to tell the mother that the poison's in their water. And all of the kids are outside playing in the pool, and the mom's like, get out of the pool, get out of the pool. Because that's like Erin Brockovich could have been the Hanford movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Very similar storyline of greed being hidden. And
well, I think they very carefully made sure it didn't have any implications towards. You know, they left the whole nuclear thing out of it completely.
Yeah, they just called it chemical waste. It's just a chemical, and that is a code word for nuclear.
And actually, I think that's what people have been trained to think of nuclear is. That's why people are not as concerned about it, because they think it's like chemical waste. But actually, chemical waste lasts a long time. There's a lot of chemical waste that also lasts a long time. That's part of what makes nuclear so bad, because they need the chemicals in doing all of this stuff, and those chemicals also leave really toxicity. They're not nuclear, but they're highly toxic, and for thousands of years, they also contaminate for, you know, 100,000 years.
Well, my dad was a chemist, and that was a age-long conversation or argument we'd have over and over again. because he believed an element was an element. And if it was that chemical basis, then it was natural. Where I believed that if you split an atom, then that element is no longer natural. It's a synthetic element. And so I would use the word synthetic, but it is interesting now, if you look on an element chart, they have they do call it man-made elements.
Right.
And that's like
right.
The americium, and you know, there's like 15
plutonium.
Nuclear,
right.
Yeah, and those are nuclear elements that have happened since they've split the atom.
Right.
So I consider that a synthetic atom. But that is, you can argue all day long, and it's just kind of like dirt is dirt, and it doesn't matter what's in the dirt. But I'm a farmer.
So you're saying that thinking from the way that the nuclear scientist thinks, that it's you haven't really created anything new, you've just rearranged what was there already, and it's not that big of a deal.
Right. And so they consider it still natural. And you'll have that argument that radiation is no different than radiation from the sun.
Right.
Where I don't believe that. I also don't think like fake sugar is the same as real sugar is how I always compare it. I mean, you look under a microscope, but they're not the same compound. And it's same with the radiation from the sun, the gamma rays versus radiation from these experiments or this waste. It's a different kind of exposure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But again, it's going to take years. It's going to take decades for people to... The thing is people who want to learn about nuclear waste, who are curious about it, they're going to go to these universities that are paid by the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not getting a fair education. You know, I was lucky because my dad was a nuclear chemist, and he worked at Hanford, and he came home and told me things. And that's how I grew up, was with his perspective. But then in the last decade or two, I've started to affirm my perspective because of the news and the different things that are coming out. You know, that's why I feel confident in what I say, because I truly, believe it.
Did you get a college degree, Heidi?
I did. I went to Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington.
And what did you graduate in? What was your degree?
My degree was in animation production.
Okay.
And it was because I really liked how you could use animation to tell stories of what...
So you need to do an animation of the unfriendly atom and counter the friendly atom video.
Right.
I'm going to challenge you here on the air. Heidi Lambert with the unfriendly atom cartoon coming to you soon.
Yeah, you know, those days are kind of far behind. But I did work with a really great artist, Galena Allen, who did a really great installation in Walla Walla. Mm. And she sat with me and had me tell different stories of growing up around Hanford. And I'm like the audio of her art installation.
That's awesome. How could we find that?
I guess she's touring her show.
Well, you'll have to send me the information, and I'll make it available.
Yeah, we'll come to Portland soon. Yeah, but I love to work with artists, and I think that's the only way we'll ever get the word out, you know.
That is it. I think we need to make it kind of fun and appealing, like, hey, this is what we're doing to make our planet. We're saving our planet, but we have to have an honest conversation about nuclear and the harm that it's doing and the lack of accountability. All of it kind of... It's time. Enough is enough, as they say. I think that's the new catchphrase. Hashtag enough is enough. And not just guns either. It's like all of it. We're done. We got to get some equity and
stuff. This is one big gun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nuclear is like the biggest weapon really out there.
I know. And you know what? It is through our intentions and positive thoughts that we'll help find solutions. On that, we have to end. You've been listening to Heidi Lampert and Lonnie Clark. Put your courage feet on. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks, Bonnie. That was great.
You too. Bye-bye.